Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Charger fan, this is going to hurt me way more than it hurts you. Actually, it's going to hurt just about everybody equally, because that was a brutal loss yesterday. Just brutal. And I know you have experience with brutal losses, but it really does feel like yesterday's 31-30 loss to the Broncos might have been the worst. Right. Yeah, I know what I said. That is how I started last week's show. And I could run back the exact same start and just change that 31-30 loss to the Broncos to a 31-26 loss to the Raiders, and it would still work. And this loss might really have been even worse than last week's loss. In fact, I know it was. I know it was worse. The only question now is this the Chargers' worst loss ever? Because this time, you thought you had won. That's what makes this so bad. This time, you thought you had won. No, this time, you didn't think you had won. You knew you had won. When Donald Parham Jr. caught this ball.
This is the game. Snap. They rush forward. Goes to Parham. Jump ball. Caught. Waiting for the signal. Signal is touchdown. Touchdown, Chargers. Donald Parham with the grab. Zeros on the clock. All Donald Parham does is catch touchdowns. There's both feet. It is not even close, DJ.
My guy, Matias Denaro. Both feet, and it's not even close, DJ. What a line. God, I love Mount Money. Mount Money Smith is one of my favorite guys. Man, he is so good. He is so talented. I love this guy. And they were fired up. In fact, those are two of my favorite guys ever. Mount Money Smith and Daniel Jeremiah. They're the guys on the call for the Chargers. And both feet in. It's not even close. They finally get over, and the Chargers lose their bleep. They were partying like it was a Super Bowl, understandably, because they finally got over. A walk-off win. Man, that felt so damn good. Except it had to be reviewed. And when it was reviewed, one camera angle showed that the ball was out when the receiver hit the ground. Overturned. Incomplete pass. Game over. Raiders win. Raiders rule. Chargers suck. Good night now.
Good night now.
And then the Raiders went crazy. A walk-off win, and the Chargers get kicked in the nads yet again. They have 6 losses this season by a combined 24 points. Somewhere, some old guy with a push broom stash is crying his eyes out. Show me your lightning bolt.
The ruling on the field has been changed. The receiver did not maintain control of the ball throughout the process of the catch. It's incomplete. Game over.
Love to say that I'm stunned, DJ, but you just can't be. It is remarkable.
I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, if DJ is saying things like, I've never seen anything like it, then you know it's never happened before. Man, these Chargers are absolutely amazing. I mean, seriously, these guys are incredible. They find new and inventive ways to lose every single week, with each L more gut-wrenching than the one before it. Just when you think it would be impossible to raise the bar, they do, again. I mean, like, the math does not add up. Mathematically, this is impossible. I could do an entire take. I could do an entire show. I could do 3 straight hours on how utterly brutal this is, but I'm going to spare you, Charger fans. I'm going to move on, because it's not like it's not going to happen again, because it will. And when it does, maybe then I'll give it the 3-hour treatment. We will jump off that bridge as soon as the Chargers burn that bridge, because you know they will. Man, I mean, again. And when you think it can't be any worse, again, it is. However, Charger fan, just know this. As bad as it is, believe it or not, it could still be worse. It can always be worse. Just ask Bears fans. Because while getting your heart ripped right out of your chest on a weekly basis is going to hurt like hell, it's still not as painful as having to watch the Bears offense on a weekly basis. And don't be confused by those empty bullcrap points and yards that they tacked on late to make it look like they battled Tennessee to that 24-17 loss, because they didn't. The Bears' offense was garbage.
Garbage.
Garbage again yesterday, garbage. Just like it always is. Garbage.
Garbage.
And let me ask you this. Has there ever been a bigger lie in life than the so-called 5-1 Bears?
You're a liar.
You're a felon. Remember how enraged Bears fans were when folks were calling them the worst 5-1 team ever, myself included? Yeah, well, they were that. In fact, they were even worse than that. The second biggest lie in life is you are what your record says you are. My ass, the hell you are, because their record said they were 5-1. Going into yesterday's game against the Titans, the Bears had the worst third down offense in the league. Then they lived down to that rep by going 2-for-15. 2-for-15 on third downs against a team, frankly, that can't stop anybody. Now that is a commitment to garbage. Go ahead,
garbage.
Avi. Thank you.
Garbage.
At one point, they had 25 yards on 15 plays. That's what the alleged offensive genius, Matt Nagy, will get you. That's what Nagy calling the shots. Nick Foles, under constant pressure again. You are what your record says you are. What bullcrap. Matt Nagy is an offensive mastermind. What bullcrap. And all the while, they're wasting one of the league's best defensive units. And they're asking them to continue to play at a level like that. Asking them to do so for very much longer is asking too much. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I'll give you something positive. How about the Carolina Panthers, who everybody expected would be pretty terrible? And they're actually pretty damn fun to watch. I mean, believe this, at 3-6, they're a much better watch than the Bears are at 5-4. I would actually pay decent money to watch the Panthers work, but you couldn't pay me enough money to sit through even one more Bears game. You don't believe me? Check this out. 4th-and-14. Check out 4th-and-14 from Teddy Bridgewater against KC.
Four-man rush. Bridgewater. Pocket collapses. He's in trouble trying to run it himself. Bridgewater. Down! Oh my goodness, what an effort.
That is awesome. I mean, you're talking about giving everything you've got.
That is just unbelievable.
Honestly, that was maybe not like Superman, but definitely like Walter Payton. That was some Walter Payton bleep at the goal line. Like Teddy. Teddy was not looking to get down. Teddy was not looking to slide. He was looking to get up and make sure he got to the sticks, which is what he did. So it's been a really rough year for injuries. So it was cool to see Christian McCaffrey back out there doing what he does after that ankle injury. And then it sucks to see the report that he might miss more time with a shoulder injury. I mean, I've already seen way too much of this. I've already seen way too much when Dak Prescott went down. So one play from yesterday that I never want to see ever again was that Kyle Allen injury for Washington. In fact, I'm not going to see that again. If you want to see it, go find it yourself. I'm not showing it here. You just know it's bad when giant Jabril Peppers, the player who accidentally leg-whipped Allen and caused the injury, said this after the fact.
You know, we all have a little pact in this league. You know, guys have came from circumstances. Guys have worked hard to get here. So you never want to see a guy go down like that, man. So, you know, I just pray for him. You know, I apologize to him. You know, that I definitely didn't intend for that to happen. You know, I'm just trying to play hard, you know, make a play for my team. And, you know, I'm still praying for him, and I'm, you know, wishing him a speedy recovery.
I like that. I like that that response. There's like a fundamental respect, or should be, of all the players in that league that it's violent. We know what we signed up for, but guys are trying to provide for their families. They're trying to do what they do, and you never want to see that happen. So I do like the response. I hate the injury, but that's what happens in that league. Injuries happen. Alex Smith, as an example. Alex Smith is a prime example. We all know his backstory. We all know what he went through to make it back. He came into the game. He played really well. But as you might imagine, he was pretty conflicted about how he got into the game.
Obviously, a ton of emotions going on for me right then, in the sense that I knew Kyle was down and knew it was pretty serious once he stayed down. So, you know, you snap into grabbing your helmet and getting ready to roll. And then all of a sudden, you know, you see him bring out the air cast in the cart. and I know that routine well.
Right, and it's a horrible routine, and here's hoping that Allen recovers swiftly and safely. Because the whole thing is just, it's raw, man. And the struggle is so real. So, clones, let me start this week by asking you a question. What do you want when you're craving protein or you need more energy? I'll tell you what you don't want. Bars, sugary snacks, energy drinks. No, you know what you want? You want beef, pure and simple. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Not shriveled, not dry, not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. So why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So make sure you look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality that you are purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares Old Trapper. What's your beef? But that said, you know me, I want to make things better, not worse. I'm here to keep things light. I'm here to keep things upbeat. I'm here to keep things positive. There's enough anger and frustration in this world. And I know that you come to me to get away from all that. And I happen to pride myself in being that guy who can provide that kind of happiness during such a challenging period. So allow me to do what I do best. Allow me to spread some good cheer. This will pick you up. This will make you happy. The Dallas Cowboys lost again. And this time, they came from ahead to do it against the league's last unbeaten team. Orlando Apollo legend Garrett Gilbert got the start at quarterback for the Cowboys. And what a moment that was. Garrett Gilbert now joins a very exclusive club of guys like Dandy Don Meredith, Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, and Ben DiNucci. And Gilbert was just about as good as you'd expect him to be, which is to say, not that good at all. But for a minute there, the Cowboys were mildly competitive. In fact, for a minute there, they had a double-digit lead over the previously, and still, undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. And they brought out all the tricks, like this punt return.
On a three and out, and it's again Wilson back and driven way back. Over the shoulder catch at the seven. And a throwback from right to left. The ball is caught by Goodwin up the left side to the 20, to the 30. C.J. Goodwin to the races, to the 30. Sideline makes a cut and gets tripped at the 10. Oh, Bones Fossil, you crazy man.
My man Fossil, you crazy man. Check out the Cowboys with the razzle dazzle. Then again, why the hell not? They've got nothing to lose. Their dignity went down the toilet weeks ago. Then in the second half, the Cowboys cowboyed down, just like they always do, just like you knew they would. They had that brutal Gilbert INT in the end zone.
Gilbert in the shotgun. 6 of 11 on third downs. He's back with a pass into the end zone. Intercepted by Minka. He brings it out to the 5. Tackled at the 8-yard line. A big takeaway for Minka Fitzpatrick with a marker down.
My goodness.
Give the people up front credit for that right. Big turnover.
No. Instead, give the people what they want. That. Knowing that game was on the line, the Cowboys did what they always do. They did what they do best. They self-destruct, they implode, they melt down, they commit stupid penalty after stupid penalty late in the game, and they put it on a silver platter for the opposing team, same as they ever were. But don't sweat it, Cowboy fan. The big boy himself is on it. Check out Mike McCarthy.
Today's a reflection of what we're capable of doing. I think we're definitely taking the steps in the right direction the last 2 weeks, as far as the understanding, the speed. We're trying to get things done. So we have a bye week. We'll spend time in the self-scout of it all, both individually for the players and obviously all three phases, because it's time. We got to get going, obviously. Everybody knows what our record is, so we need to get going. We need to start stacking wins.
Let me help you out, deciphering that coaching word salad. I love a head coach of a 2-7 team saying, quote, "We'll get loaded up because it's time. We got to get going." Yeah, I love the urgency when you're 2-7. Hey, Michael. The time to, quote, get loaded up and the time to, quote, get going was before week 1, not before you take the field for week 11. I mean, dude, I know you used to coach Green Bay, and it's part of my favorite sports book ever. Jerry Kramer's Green Bay Packer Diary. He famously tells the story about Vince Lombardi telling his team at one point, "Gentlemen, now we begin the big push." I love that McCarthy at 2-7 is kind of implying as much. Hey, gentlemen, now we begin the big push. Yeah, good idea, Michael. Good idea, because if you don't, you'll be back in that barn breaking tape with your equally unemployed assistants looking to con another owner into giving you another shot. Or even worse, you'll be sitting back in that little toll booth on the bridge letting people through, like back in the day. I'm telling you, man, 2-7 is not the time to begin the big push. Charles Robinson. Charles, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, brother?
Good, dude. Good. Good to have you back. Let me get right into it with you because you had a great tweet last night and you posted it, quote, "WTF is Brady doing?" End of quote. Perfectly said. Now you've had some time to think on this, sleep on this. What the bleep was Tom Brady doing last night, Charles?
Well, you know, I think the book on Tom, even if you go back to the Patriots, he's always been a guy who he just doesn't react well to getting beat up in the pocket, you know, physical contact. And you could say that about every quarterback, but it's part of why you're seeing the NFL shift away from a lot of these pocket guys. When you look at the top 5-6 quarterbacks now, where the league's going, you know, it's even the big guys. Look at Justin Herbert. Everybody's hot on Justin Herbert right now. He's a big guy. You know, he looks like your standard pocket quarterback, but he can move. You know, he can create. You know, Josh Allen, another guy who looks like the old school, big, giant-armed pocket quarterback. Well, guess what? He can move. He can create. And, you know, Tom Brady and look, Drew Brees didn't get hit last night, but Drew Brees is another one of these guys where I think they're becoming, you know, sort of dinosaurs. That's why they're 40-year-old guys playing in the pocket. And opposing teams sit there and go, look, we get pressure on these guys. We don't even necessarily have to finish sacks. Just hit them, affect them, get in their face. You know, if you can get middle pressure, they're going to get frustrated. They're going to start to create mistakes. And I think you saw that with Tom. It was all about the line just looking completely overwhelmed. The Saints front looked amazing. And, you know, if that's something that's going to happen in the playoffs, the Bucs are going to get slaughtered. Like, you can't let Brady get hit that often, even in an offense like this. I don't think that's representative of what they're going to be the remainder of the season, but, you know, that fatal flaw has been there for a while with Tom, and you go to talk to Patriots coaches, talk to Patriots fans. If Tom gets hit consistently enough, you know, he gets frustrated. He'll throw some balls up. He'll throw, you know, he'll make some bad decisions, and, you know, it's something that's never really gone away, and it won't go away. Even his 40s, like, you can't let these guys get hit in the pocket like this.
Talking to Charles Robinson, a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. Yeah, obviously, he did not care for that, and it went the way you would expect when you keep banging on a guy like that. But what about the Saints? What does last night, you talked about their defensive front and how well they played. Overall, what does last night say about the Saints?
They're getting it together. You know, I think early on, I think there were a lot of questions about, obviously, Drew Brees, the downfield ball. But I think you're seeing health. I think, you know, when you have the full complement of offense on the field, the Saints can still be effective. But again, I think this comes down to, can you protect Drew? You know, make sure Drew doesn't get hit consistently. But to me, the flip side of this is that if the Saints defense comes around, that's a secondary that's had problems. You know, they make the addition of Quan Alexander, which was really interesting before the trade deadline. It's a team that's, you know, going to have salary cap problems. Next year, you kind of feel the all-in push by the Saints right now. But the defensive front, if that front can apply pressure the way that you know, Davenport's a guy they went all in the draft to add him. I mean, if you're getting pressure consistently from that front, the Saints are going to be tough to deal with. And you look at the NFC, I think this was the declaration that right now the NFC is completely wide open. It could be Seattle, you know, when you want to talk about Super Bowl favorites. It could be Seattle. It could be the Saints. You know, obviously, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers are going to be there. Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, there's, you know, Green Bay Packers right now. Aaron Rodgers is playing some of the best football of his career. I think it would be really hard to sit here and go, yeah, that NFC team right there, that's the Super Bowl favorite. you basically have four or five teams that could all end up being the Super Bowl rep in the NFC.
We're talking to Charles Robinson. All right, so flip that over to the AFC for a minute. Pittsburgh comes back. They beat Dallas to move to 8-0. I mean, certainly you could argue that that was a major trap game. They find a way to get through it. Halfway through their schedule, they are undefeated. What do you make of what you've seen from the Steelers so far?
Well, you know, I think offensively, it's a team that I think consistently, if you can get them running the football a little more consistently, they're going to have a shot at one of these seasons where it's, you know, 14-2, maybe 15-1, one of the more memorable seasons, you know, for Tomlin. But I still think this is going to come down to ultimately, where can Ben Roethlisberger take you? Like, it's, remember, if you're sitting there and you're looking at the AFC, it's, you're going to have to go through Kansas City at some point. Like, the way Kansas City's playing football right now, I think they've separated themselves along with the Steelers from the rest of the NFL, particularly, you know, Baltimore was a team that we talked about early. Tennessee was a team that we talked about early. We've seen some flaws there. I still think Kansas City's the gold standard. So you have to look at Pittsburgh and say, can you go up and down the field with Kansas City consistently? Either can your defense stop Kansas City consistently, or can you go up and down the field with them? I think even Pittsburgh's defense, as good as it is, and remember, they lost Devin Bush, and they've been able to handle that right now, you're still going to get into one of these 30-35-point shootouts with Kansas City. On an off day, Kansas City scores 35 points. So is Ben going to be able to basically step toe-to-toe with Pat Mahomes and produce consistently enough, you know, to keep up with the Chiefs? Right now, if I'm the Steelers and I'm Mike Tomlin, you're figuring out, how do we measure ourselves the rest of the season against these guys? What tweaks can we make? What, you know, developmentally, what can we continue to add to our offense the remainder of the season to prepare for the Kansas City game that we know we're ultimately going to run up against these guys in the playoffs?
I mean, actually, to answer the question, right, like, no, nobody can. Nobody can stand in and go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. The way you do that is by keeping the ball out of his hands. I mean, God, this guy, the numbers, Charles, are insane. He passes for 372 Crazy. Yards, four touchdowns on the season, 25 TDs, and only one INT, and nobody's freaking out. Nobody even blinks. It just seems so natural. Like, when you look at this guy's career, 101 career TD passes, 19 career INTs. When you consider how good he is, how young he is, the fact that he's going to get better, the talent that he has around him, how special can this era be with him and that team?
Oh, he's flying. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like you said, I mean, nobody's freaking out. That's the weird thing about it is, you know, I have an MVP vote, and you're always assessing, you know, as the season goes on, kind of who's in that race and how, you know, how does it work? And it's been all about Russell Wilson, or, you know, you talk about Aaron Rodgers, and there was a moment where, I think it was like last week, where I started to look at kind of what Pat Mahomes was doing, and I'm thinking, man, we don't even talk about this guy, but he's having, in terms of, you know, one half of a quarterback season, one of the greatest ever in history. I mean, he could legitimately end up having a season where he throws, hey, 44, 46, 48 touchdowns, and 2, 3, 4 interceptions, which is insanity. Like, it's even in this era of the NFL to be not only that efficient, you know, scoring, but just it's such a turnover predicated game when you talk about wins and losses, to have a quarterback who can protect the ball that well. And the way that he does it is, it's otherworldly. I grew up in an era where it was like Dan Marino was, you know, the gold standard guy. And how could anyone ever match Dan in terms of numbers? The way he played football, I think Pat Mahomes realistically has a chance. And again, we're so early in his career, but the way this is projecting out, barring catastrophic injury or the team just completely being disassembled around him, where does this change for him? Because I don't see how the league has had a few years to adjust to Pat Mahomes and not been able to do it. And so what's fundamentally going to change to knock him off his axis? I think it's like Marino. We've spent years and years and years looking at Dan Marino going, well, at some point the league can adjust to him, or, you know, there were fundamental flaws with Miami. They couldn't find a running game. There were reasons why he didn't win the Super Bowl. He got that out of the way early. Mahomes did. So to me, he could end up being that era defining, you know, maybe league defining quarterback that Tom Brady became before him, and Dan Marino, John Elway became before him, Joe Montana. To me, he's taking the league to an entirely new place, and it's become he is so in orbit. We're so used to how he plays that we don't even stop to look at his numbers and go, we've never seen anything like this before, but that's actually what's happening right in front of us.
And the guy is unworldly. Charles Robinson joining us for a few more moments. So you and Therese talked about this on your podcast. You guys talked about what a blast it was to watch Tua and Kyler yesterday. I don't want to get too carried away because it is pretty early, but when you're watching a rookie and a second-year QB playing like the two of them did that feel like that might be a preview of things to come over the next 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, you see a lot of these guys that are running up into each other the first few years of their career. I mean, you saw it with Lamar Jackson and Pat Mahomes. You know, I guess Russell Wilson was kind of the in-between guy who ushered in this, you know, hey, we can have shorter quarterbacks, or we want quarterbacks who can both throw it and run it, you know, economically. And were these younger guys, though, as you said, Tua, Kyler, that's sort of that next wave, that next transition, because – hey, Trevor Lawrence is going to come in and, you know, he's big, strong arm, but he can run. You know, Justin Fields is going to come in and, I mean, tune into any Ohio State game and tell me that he's not going to give Trevor Lawrence everything he can handle to be the number one pick in the draft. It's, you know, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert. There's no more. You're not going to see the Joe Flaccos anymore. I believe that. You're not going to see these statues, guys who can have, you know, 10-year solid careers, win Super Bowls, being people who can't create or can't move around in the pocket consistently. It's being pushed out of the game from the college ranks. And when you watch Kyler, you watch Tua, you don't even think anymore about, you know, especially when you see Kyler play, you're not like, well, geez, this was a guy who never in a million years could have made it in this league because of his height. Now you just look and you go, he's faster than everybody else on the field. He's got an arm. He might be the best running quarterback in the NFL right now. I think the quarterback era right now, we spent all these years wondering, how are we going to transition from Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, you know, Eli Manning, all these guys who are putting up big numbers and who are kind of those statue quarterbacks. How are we going to transfer out of the golden era? Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, how are we going to transfer out of that golden era, and what's the next golden era of quarterbacks going to look like? You're watching it right now. Go look at the top 5, 6, 7 quarterbacks in the league. That's these guys, and that's where this is all going, and that's where the college game's going to go. You're going to see it all trend toward guys that have the big arms but can create and can move and aren't just going to stand back there anymore.
If things that suck was a category on the big blue board, and this is the undisputed worst year ever was a clue, what is 2020? Would be the answer. And the answer would be fittingly in the form of a question. Because yesterday, the devil that is pancreatic cancer took Jeopardy host and TV icon Alex Trebek at the age of 80. Of course, Alex Trebek is as household as they come, because this man was literally a staple in millions of homes, households, 5 nights a week for nearly 4 decades. Which is amazing when you think about it. Aaron Rodgers was one of the many, many people who wrote about Trebek yesterday, saying, quote, 6 p.m. weeknights will never be the same. So many great memories, and I'm thankful to have met him, end quote. So over nearly 4 decades, George Alexander Trebek hosted arguably America's most popular game show. Never missed an episode. Never. Except for that one time on April Fool's Day in 97 when he switched roles with Pat Sajak. And he did Wheel of Fortune and Sajak did Jeopardy, which is pretty curious. One's like the hardest game show ever and one's the easiest. I mean, yeah, at times, I've got to say my guy did come off as smarter than the rest of us, which at times I found amusing, given that he was the one who was given all the answers ahead of time. But from a television standpoint, really, from a professional standpoint, he was a pro's pro. And he did provide comedy at times with his harsh reactions to contestants who buzzed in incorrectly. I'll reset some of the best ones in a moment. I want to go back, though, to March of 2019 when he first revealed a stage 4 diagnosis. And I mention this because over the years I've done this show and you've heard me use this phrase, we all either know somebody who's had cancer. We all either know somebody who has cancer, or we know somebody who knows somebody who has cancer. So I want to go back to when he first revealed that he was stage four. It was then that he vowed to fight the low survival rate as hard as he could and to continue working as long as he could, which is exactly what he did. For nearly 2 years, he hosted that show while undergoing debilitating treatments that he openly admitted put him in a state of depression. But he was active, not only in going to work, but he raised a lot of money and a lot of awareness. He became the new face of pancreatic cancer. He became one of the top fundraisers for Purple Stride LA. 8 months after his diagnosis, during an episode in November, a contestant used Final Jeopardy as an opportunity to reveal a note to Trebek on his podium screen that nearly brought the game show host to tears.
Did you come up with the right one? No. What is "We love you" out? That's very kind of you. Thank you. Cost you $19.95. You're left with $5. Okay.
I mean, you can hear him getting choked up as he reads the note that said, "We love you, Alex." And if you know that show, you know that moment will go down as one of the most iconic in Jeopardy history. In addition to the outpouring of support, he also got to host the incomparable run of James Holzhauer, who made national news during his unprecedented run in the final 18 months of Trebek's life. Like that run from Jeopardy, James spawned the GOAT Tournament, a four-night primetime event which he also hosted while he was undergoing treatment. So now part of the appeal of the show, of course, was the unintentional comedy that was spawned when you put three nerds, bookworms, on TV every single night. And then you ask them 61 questions. You're going to get some moments now. And most of the very best moments revolved around sports. Because said nerds, bookworms, were not really into sports, right? How about this question about which NFC team has never played in the Super Bowl?
As of 2010, it's the only current National Football Conference team that has never played in the Super Bowl. Detroit Lions is what we're looking for.
I don't
actually Jacksonville
care.
Panthers. No, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I mean, in fairness to her, she's right. The Jacksonville Panthers have never been to the Super Bowl, nor will they ever. Here is another awesome fail.
Joel Embiid in 2019 won the trademark for this nickname of his that also describes the 76ers' strategy of improving the team.
Paul, what is Dua 180?
Nope.
That might be my favorite one ever. Man, that dude just pulled that right out of his ass. Dua 180.
What is Dua 180?
Nope.
I mean, that is so bad. That is so dumb. That is so funny. You couldn't dream that up if I gave you a week, a month, a year, the rest of your life. Here's some more great whiffs.
100 plus assists in an NHL season has been accomplished only 13 times. 11 times by this player. Joe,
who's Magic Johnson?
Oh, no. Talking about hockey, not the NBA.
In 2010, Cam Newton became this university's third Heisman Trophy winner.
What is Ohio State?
No, what is Auburn? You're obviously not a big football fan.
Though he didn't play organized hoops until the ninth grade, this Spurs center is a three-time NBA Finals MVP. Leah.
Who is Parker?
No. Hans.
Is Carmelo Anthony?
No. Wrong team.
354 wins did not overcome the controversy as this ex-Red Sox pitcher didn't make the Hall of Fame cut in 2013. Goodwin?
Who is Pete Rose?
No. Stacy.
Who is Kurt Schilling?
No. Sarah.
Who is Mark McGuire?
No. Obviously, you're hoping that baseball does not come up as a topic.
Colleges by team names for 200.
Crimson Tide. Terry.
What is Auburn?
No.
How many times do you think that he wanted, and because he's such a pro, he didn't, but how many times do you think he wanted to say no, dumbass? But those are made so much better. They're so good already, but so much better because of the trademark disdain of one George Alexander Trebek. Again, a pro's pro, a TV legend, gone, but never, ever forgotten. Just like this answer on Celebrity Jeopardy from Kareem.
What is X?
No.
Rest in peace, AT. Thanks for the memories. May the next host be as gracious as you were. And may he or she hate wrong answers as much as you did. Man, good luck following that guy. Who'd want that gig? It's like following Bob Barker. We've seen how that's gone. Or Richard Dawson. But even tougher, I think.
In the United States are NC-17, R, PG, PG-13, and this one. Kareem.
What is X?
No.
Dude, get your head out of the gutter, Kareem. Come on, man. X? Perv?
Went in the wrong
direction. What is triple X?
We were looking for a G rating, not an X rating. Remember, Kareem, this is...
What is Pornhub?
Dana, pick again.
Come on, man. I bet you did not know this. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? That said, we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be ready for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms can help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do for your home and your family. So what you want to do is install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, it's really important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. And remember, alarms do not last forever. They do have to be replaced at least every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time you replaced yours, it's time to get the unit replaced completely. Here's a great option, my favorite. First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. As mentioned, the alarm does provide 2-in-1 protection against both smoke and carbon monoxide, and I don't have to worry about that battery change for a decade. Lastly, make sure you take time to discuss home safety with your family. You want to plan and you want to practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. For more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at your home with your family, go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. firstalert.com/fireprevention month. We are joined by Indiana head coach Tom Allen. Tom, welcome back. Good to have you on the show. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great. Excited to be back on the show.
Good to have you back on the show. So you're coming off that win over Michigan where you were up 24-7 at half thanks to Michael Penix Jr., quarterback, and your defense forcing 3 3-and-outs on Michigan's first 4 possessions. Let me start right there. What was your message to the team before the game, and then how pleased were you with the way they came out, set the tone, and dominated from the outset?
You know, we just felt like we needed to start fast, you know. That's something we hadn't done. I didn't feel like in the last couple of games, especially offensively. And so, to me, against an opponent of Michigan's caliber, I just felt like that was going to be a huge thing for us, and made a big deal about it during the week, and the emphasis on execution and being able to be locked in right from the very beginning. And so, man, I thought our guys started fast and then finished strong both the half and the end of the game. So really pleased with the way our guys responded to that challenge.
Indiana coach Tom Allen, my guest. I want to get to the rest of the game in a moment, but before I do that, I want to talk about something that took place in the locker room after the game. Somebody yelled out, "Hey, coach," and then the rest of the team shouted, "We love you," and then you jumped into their arms. It really was an amazing moment. Can you describe what that moment felt like to you?
Well, it's just a special bond with our team here. There's, you know, such a strong amount of passion and emotion that we feel for each other because we've been through so much together. And the guys, they believed in me when they came here as recruits. And we sold a vision for what we thought we could do here. And, you know, I believe we could do the things that we're doing right now. And not everybody agreed with me, but these players did, or they wouldn't have come. And so for these guys to be able to just respond that way, I mean, just the only thing I could just do is just jump into their arms, man. I was just so happy for them and for them to be able to be rewarded for believing and for all the things that we've asked them to do and sacrifice and how hard they've worked. And I just love them, and they love me right back.
You can tell. Tom Allen joining us. In fact, I said that I would get back to that notion of love in a minute, but I'd rather just keep it there for one more second. I mean, when you talk about that, love each other, why is that such an important concept to you as a coach and one that you have at the center of your program?
Well, I just think it's about relationships. And when the players know that you love them more as an individual person than as a football player, everything changes. And that's how we built this program. That's how I built my whole coaching career. That's what I was modeled by my father. And it's about people. It's about relationships. It's about coaching from the heart to the heart. And, you know, I feel that this is what I was called to do. I feel like this is why the good Lord put me on this earth, was to be a football coach, to impact lives, to this profession and this great sport of football. And when you're doing it for those reasons and when you believe you've got the ulterior purpose is way bigger than the game, I think the guys, they understand that. I want these guys to be, great men. I want them to be future husbands and fathers that have character and stand up for what they believe in and learn to fight for what they believe in. And to me, it's just a powerful thing when they understand it's not about just, going out there and winning football games for the guys around you. It's about doing things together that are special. And so that's what LEO means to me. And it's not about me. And I don't care who gets the credit. I want this whole football team to have that mindset.
Indiana head coach Tom Allen joins us. So you held Michigan to 13 rushing yards. You nearly doubled them up in terms of times of possession. From the outside, that felt like a pretty complete domination, both in terms of the score and the physicality. So how pleased were you with the physicality on both sides of the ball?
Oh, very pleased. I knew that was going to be the key. And it all starts up front. In our program, we talk about big men lead the way. On the offensive line, on the defensive line, they set the tone. You got to be able to run the football and stop the run. And we were able to do both of those things, and then obviously we throw the football effectively. And I just feel like that, that's how you win games. That's how you finish games. We were able to get the ball back with 5:05 to go in the fourth quarter and never gave it up again by running the football, running the clock out, making them burn their timeouts. And so to me, that was a critical part. That's our weight room. It's our toughness, it's our grit, it's the fight of this program, and I'm just really proud of the guys and the way they're able to finish it out on Saturday.
We're talking to Tom Allen. Tom, let me get you to go back to Penix for a minute, because his high school coach, Jason Roberts at Tampa Bay Tech, has talked about all the things that other programs thought that Michael could not do. Like, some want him to play defense, others didn't want a left-handed quarterback, and on and on. When you watch him play, what are the things that jump out to you in terms of what he can do and what makes him special?
Well, first of all, he has a really innate ability to read coverages, just very instinctive with understanding defensive concepts and where the ball needs to go, makes those decisions very quickly. And then you mix in the natural talent of a quick release, a strong arm, the velocity of that football is coming at you quick and it's able to just knife right in there. He's extremely accurate. And that, to me, is the quality that just makes for a great quarterback. So I thought he was a quarterback from day one, never even talked about or even, thought about playing any other position. Thought he had great leadership skills. He's quiet, but he has a quiet confidence about himself, and he absolutely is never too big. The moment's never too big for him, and it's been that way since day one, and he just is calm and cool out there and just – making plays.
All right, so when you and I spoke before the season started, we talked about all the things that had not been done in a long time at IU before you took over, and the fact that you're accomplishing those things right now, like, that was the first win over Michigan in 33 years. I know you're on to the next challenge, but if I were to get you to stop and think on that for a minute, how significant does that feel?
Well, it's a big deal. I was a senior in high school the last time Indiana beat Michigan. To be able to do something that many others have struggled to do. And, since I've been here, we've had some close calls we're not able to finish. And it just to be able to just kind of erase some of these negative things that people decide that you can't do based on your past. And that, to me, has been the big challenge to this football program, to these players, is to not listen to those things. And there's no doubt we've been, every time we turn around, there's another milestone that we're able to cross off, or we haven't done this since this many years ago. And to me, that just feeds into the whole mindset that we got a strong belief here in this program, and we're not going to be judged, and we're not going to be, our future is not going to be dictated based on our past.
So not only that, but also a strong culture, a strong identity. As an example, defensive back Reese Taylor was asked after the game about the goal of being a top 10 defense in the season or for the season. His response was, quote, "We should be number one in the country in my eyes." Like, what does that tell you about the culture and the identity and the belief you're talking about that you've been able to build and instill in this program?
Well, from day one, I've told our team this. Before there's a reality, there's a mentality. And if you don't believe in yourselves, why should anybody else? And so with that mindset in place, we just said, hey, this is what I believe we can do here. If you believe this, get on board. If you don't, then you just need to step aside and let somebody else take your place. And that goes for coaches and players. And it's been that way from the very beginning. And these guys have bought in. We've set goals. We set things. And then we go work to achieve those. And we work our tails off here. And we don't just sit here and talk about things. We have a tremendous work ethic. And there's a toughness that's built in this program. And there's just an absolute belief and a desire to be able to accomplish those things that many said we could not do. So to me, it's a collective effort of everybody doing their job. Everybody doing little things right every single day, and that creates that belief. And to me, it's about preparation.
I like that, Bullet. Before there is a reality, there is a mentality. All right, so one final thought. Next up is Michigan State Saturday. What it is early in the week, of course, but what concerns you the most about facing them?
Well, I think they have a very, very talented receiver core. That's how they beat Michigan. They shoot the ball over their head consistently. And a lot of accuracy from their quarterback, big physical offensive line, physical defense. You know, that's a program that's built off those principles as we played them over the years, always that way. And they got an edge about them. And so to me, very good football team. Big Ten road game. We got to be at our very, very best. We can't be sitting here and reading our press clippings and listening to everybody talk to us about how excited they are about what we're doing. And to me, it's about a 1-0 mindset. We got to do a great job preparing this week and play our best football on Saturday in East Lansing.
We were talking to Tom Allen. First win over Michigan in 33 years. They are 3-0. They are number 10 in both polls, and that is the next opportunity, the next challenge. Michigan State at East Lansing on Saturday. Tom, thank you very much. Good to have you back on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, buddy. Have a great day.
All right, so one of the more fascinating aspects to me and the pro-athlete lifestyle is the pro-athlete diet. And it comes up quite a bit when I talk to these guys because I'm always curious about what kind of fuel they're smashing up. And more importantly, how much and what they're running on. Like, take a look at The Rock on Instagram. He eats an ocean of fish every single day. And then there were those stories about how Mike Phelps would inhale 4 plates of spaghetti. And depending on what account you read, he would smash up 6,000 to 10,000 calories daily when he was training for the Olympics. And you can save the tweet about how the bong rips probably helped with his appetite. Very obvious, very lame, very predictable. Joe Thomas told me that he crushed 2 sleeves of Girl Scout cookies before going to sleep every single night when he was a lineman. Nick Hardwick was on my podcast. He told me he was vacuuming. He was hoovering Ben and Jerry's ice cream in bed on the regular every night, like at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, these dudes' bodies are high-octane machines. Their metabolism is set to broil 24/7. They're burning the calories before they even get them down the gullet. So nothing really surprises me about these guys. Or at least I thought, until I heard what Falcons fullback Keith Smith was grubbing on. First things first, all due respect to my man. He was an amazing jungle guest earlier this summer. He brought some crazy positivity with him. He made it much better. He made everything much better. And he's a 7-year vet in the not-for-long league, playing in a position that does not get the respect it deserves. So I'm not here to question him or his methods at all. In fact, I'm here to marvel. With that said, here's what he told the Endless Hustle podcast. Here's what he told them he fuels up on this past weekend.
You probably won't believe it, but most people who know me know that it's legit. I actually eat Chipotle about 4 or 5 times a day. This is not a joke. Like, this is 4 or 5 times a day. I got my bowl, same thing every time. You know what you're going to get, the consistency, but I literally eat Chipotle about 4 or 5 times a day.
Chipotle, 4 to 5 times a day. Not 4 to 5 times a week or even a month, 4 to 5 or a year, 4 to 5 times a day. My man, I've done the math. That's a minimum of 28 times a week, 120 times a month, 1,460 times a year. And you heard him. He tagged it with. He was adamant. Oh, no, I'm not lying.
You're a liar.
I'm not a liar and I'm not a felon. I'm addicted to the sea. Chipotle. Hey, again, I don't want to crack on this guy because if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. And my man is in the 7th year of his NFL career. He signed a multi-million-dollar extension. He's important in what they do. So, and by the way, he's going to need that extra money to keep that habit. But it's no secret that Chipotle's had a rough time now with the health department for years. there was the norovirus outbreak back in 17. Remember, they paid out 25 mil in federal fines. There are countless tweets every single day about people finding undercooked meat and hair in their burritos. Seriously, check out their mentions as recently as this morning. And there's not the not-so-flattering word association that always seems to come with Chipotle and their grub.
Diarrhea is the great equalizer. Think about it.
You think I'm making that up? Check out this parody PSA about eating Chipotle.
If you're like other Americans, you love to eat Chipotle, but you hate all those terrible bloodstains in your underwear. Well, now there's a product that can clean even bloodstains caused by Chipotle right off your underwear. Chipotle away!
Anyway, Keith Smith has got 3 carries this year. But that's less about him and more about the position. It is worth pointing out that he goes to Chipotle more in one day than he's toted the rock for the Falcons all season. Now, if you're thinking this dude is slamming fatty burritos and chips exclusively, he's not. He's actually going lean protein the entire way.
What's your order?
I get chicken, and then I get the side of rice, and then I get a side of beans, and then that's it.
All right, so chicken, rice, and beans, and that's it. So that sounds pretty good, right? That's fine. But since it's so simple, why not just kind of make it yourself, right? Or have somebody make that for you. Why go to Chipotle 4 to 5 times a day? Unless he's ordering multiple bowls at once and saving them. But then the only thing more dicey than Chipotle is leftover Chipotle. Again, my man has got a plan and he's working his plan. And he knows what he's doing. And it's working. He is an athlete at the highest level. And he's paid like one. And he performs like one. But damn, I gotta say, man, that was a little shocking to hear. Shout out to my man Keith Smith, and more importantly to his insides, for tolerating that diet. My man's got an iron stomach. That's amazing. 4 to 5 times a day. I mean, could you eat anything 4 to 5 times a day? D-Rod tweets, I haven't had Chipotle 4 to 5 times in my life. Is it that good? Bleep looks nasty. I don't know, dude. I don't go. He goes there 4 to 5 times a day, man. Who are you, Logan Rome?
Rogan Lowe.
Logan loves it, man. Logan's all about it. Logan, he would go every day if I let him.
Rogan Lowe.
Not 4 or 5 times a day. He'd go once a day, though, for sure. Although I will say, Logan also is an enormous chronic taco dude. He's all about chronic taco. He is Wesley Woodyard. Wesley, good to have you back, my man. How are you?
Jim, Jungle, what's good, fam?
What's good, fam? In fact, before we get into what's going on in the NFL and your thoughts around the league, bring me up to date. How are you doing? How is the fam? How is life?
Man, we're doing good, man. Just accepted a new position. I'm a part-time Little League baseball coach.
Great. Nice. Well done. So let's talk some baseball. Your son, Wesley Grayson, is playing baseball these days. He's swinging the big lumber in his last game especially. How much fun are you having watching him and coaching him?
Oh, man. It's way more fun than it is frustrating. I say it. I got to be honest, man. But it's exciting to see my son play, man. Last game was his third little inside the park home run. It's funny watching those kids play, man. It's a joy to see those kids enjoying baseball, man.
You like the game? Are you a baseball guy?
No, I mean, you know what? I grew up playing football. I grew up playing sandlot baseball. I tried out for baseball, made a team, and then I quit 2 weeks in. That was the only thing I ever quit.
Too boring?
But I like watching baseball, man. I got a couple baseball friends down here in Orlando, man. D Gordon, man, he's one of my good homies. So I stay tuned in to him, Mookie Betts, man. So a couple of the guys I done met before.
I got it. Wesley Woodyard is joining us. All right, let's talk a little bit of football. Why don't we start with the Titans and what they did to the Bears yesterday. Tennessee was coming off a pair of tough losses to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. How did they look to you yesterday, and how critical was it for them to get back on the winning track the way they did?
Man, I'm going to say these three names, A.J. Brown, Jayon Brown, and Jeffrey Simmons. They're going to be household names in the NFL for a long time. Man, but it was they were really beneficial to I don't know what was going on with Chicago, man. Nick Foles didn't wake up until the fourth quarter of that game. But the Titans defense, man, they got a couple holes in there they have to fix. And Ryan Tannehill again showed up and was able to, you know, manage that ball game and eat up the clock. Derrick Henry didn't go over 100 yards. That's very rare nowadays. So, you know, man, overall, man, those Titans, they got a couple things to fix. But I think you're looking at a wild card, definitely at worst case scenario, a wild card team if they can't pull out these victories coming up versus the Colts.
We're talking to Wesley Woodyard. All right, so in terms of that matchup, you've got that Thursday night game. It's at home against Indianapolis. The Titans are 6-2. The Colts are 5-3. How big is that game then in terms of divisional play?
It's huge because, you know, in that division, either you're going to play Houston back-to-back or the Colts back-to-back if you're the Titans. And that's what's going to happen. Within the next 3 weeks, they're going to be seeing each other a lot. And new quarterback behind the snap, you know, Phillip Rivers. He's a game changer. Playing against this dude in San Diego, every time he got out there, it's a dub. And it's just like that's what they're going to get a chance to go up against, man. And I think this is going to be a make-or-break-it game for these guys going into the rest of the season. This is going to decide who that division belongs to.
Wesley Woodyard's my guest. Wesley, take me inside the facility. For instance, what is the turnaround from a Sunday game to a Thursday night game like? How are the guys feeling physically today? And then how do you go about preparing for a game so quickly after your previous game?
Man, you're pretty beat up. You know, you're pretty beat up mostly on those Monday to Tuesday nights. But I say Thursday, got a little swelling, you're a little sore, but if your coach is taking advantage of the opportunity and that's playing a primetime Thursday night game, let your guys recover. You're doing walkthroughs. You're having late meetings. You're enjoying yourself as a player because everything is relaxed, and that allows you. I know for me, it allowed me to lock into the game plan a little bit more and focus more. You get a chance to watch more film. So that's the things that are allowing teams to win on Thursday nights. That approach to that week, man, is very key. It's very the veteran guys have to rest up. If not, you're going to see guys falling by the wayside.
We're getting caught up with Wesley Woodyard, talking a little NFL ball with him. All right, so what about last night? Like, everybody was expecting the Saints-Buccaneers game to be a great game. I understand the NFL, you don't always get what you expect, especially this is such a strange year. But I'm not sure anybody expected that kind of a beatdown or that kind of a boat race. Like, how surprised were you by that? And what's that say about both of those teams individually?
First off, man, we were witnessing a record-breaking performance by potentially either one of those, two of the greatest quarterbacks to play this game, and Breeze and Brady. But last night showed the world that the NFC South still belongs to Drew Breeze. I had friends in the locker room talking about Tampa Bay, they were who we thought they were, and we didn't let them off the hook. They were beating those guys down, and they showed flashes of what Tampa Bay looked like last year. Now, don't get me wrong, they're still a great team. Brady was frustrated, and you could see that. You know, last night Brady came out there, and he thought that, you know, we're Tampa Bay. We're going to show up, and we're going to win. And nobody showed up to play for the Buccaneers, and that's why they got mollywopped. Going into the second quarter, the game was already over with. You know, you look at Brady trying to throw up shots and making plays, and the defense, they made some key plays, but it wasn't enough to contain a well-rounded team in New Orleans. And to me, I think that was an early showcase of, you know, one of the NFC championship favorites, if you ask me. If that New Orleans team is well put together, and you can see it, and they're really well coached, and it plays out that way. And Tom Brady is no longer in New England. Where that occasional fire alarm at 2 a.m. goes off and helps your team win, you are now have to win this game every year. Every game is going to be a hard-fought game for the Bucs when they're playing physical, well-coached football teams like the Saints.
There's so much in that response that I like, especially the fact that they got mollywhopped, and they did. And Wesley, like, we know the Saints, like you said, that's a well-oiled machine. They're extremely well-coached. They're motivated. They're professional. Is there something even above and beyond that for that matchup? I mean, they got Tampa Bay coming in. They want to make sure that everybody knows that the division still runs through them. Is it me, or do they play with even more of a chip on their shoulder than even they normally might because of what was at stake and who they were playing?
I think definitely that showed. You know, the Saints knew and they recognized the magnitude of this game. I don't think the Buccaneers, youth of their roster, really kind of understood it, because the Buccaneers have not had this quality of a game in years. That the New Orleans Saints, they have this game almost week in and week out. And you can really see it showed, the experience of that team showed last night.
We're talking to Wesley Woodyard. Okay, so what about Tom Brady? You mentioned that he was frustrated. Where do you think that frustration is coming from specifically? Obviously, the butt kicking. Nobody wants that on a big stage. But he did look really frustrated. What do you think that source of frustration is for him?
You know, I think it came down to Tom really seeing, like, he could see early, things aren't going my way. And once that game kept going on, you know, I think he kind of tried to go into complete playmaker mode, throwing up shots. Forcing passes in here, you know, and it really showed, like I said, man, those guys were really at his head. And Tom is not good with pressure. They were playing great defensive ball. And I think the New Orleans Saints, man, they're very key chess players. Like, they move a lot of pieces around and make you be accountable for a lot of things. So I think that frustrated Tom, knowing that, man, I'm no longer in New England, where the football IQ and awareness is through the roof on my team. And in every little moment of the game, I could potentially lose, and it can cost my team 7 points, or it can cost my team an early night. And I think you saw that early last night in that first quarter by the New Orleans Saints.
Wesley Woodyard joining us for a few more moments. Let me get into the Lumberjacks power rankings, all right? So who do you have on top? Is it Kansas City, or is it Pittsburgh, and why?
I'm sorry, man. The things that Kansas City do, one loss, two losses, three losses, they're still going to be number one. You got to beat them, man. Andy Reid is a great mastermind. So Kansas City is number one. Pittsburgh undefeated. Yes, they've proven themselves that they are a true undefeated team at number two. The Saints last night, we all witnessed it. Seattle's coming in at fourth. Baltimore at five. And I still got Tampa Bay, you know, pulling in the top ten. They're going to round out. They're going to come at number six. But my dark horse is the Miami Dolphins, and here's why. Right now, it's tour time in Miami. It's time for the Fins to win. They're sitting at 5-3, my man, and they're going to their next opponents. They got the Chargers. They're playing in Denver. They're playing the New York Jets, the Cincinnati Bengals. They got a potential chance to go 4-0 in this third quarter of the season. And going into December, you're sitting at 9-3. Come on, man, that's scary. That's a scary Miami Dolphins team, where not only just me, but the whole world thought that Miami pretty much basically threw in the chips and said, hey, we're going to bench Fitzpatrick and we're going to give up this season. I think that shows a great character by the Miami Dolphins team. And to me, that's why they're my dark horse. And I think they're going to be, you're definitely watching a future wild card team. And who would even think this? The Miami Dolphins has a chance to win their division. That's crazy. I haven't imagined saying that in a long time.
No doubt about that. I think it's going to be tough right now or this season with Buffalo playing as well as they are. But you're right. I mean, they're going to figure in this thing. They're 5-3. Their defense is playing well. It is two a time. Wesley, really quickly, you mentioned the Chargers. Like, I understand that in this league, you got to bounce back quickly, right? You have to have a short memory. I would imagine also, though, that every loss is a tough loss. If you're the Chargers and you go down the way they keep going down, this is not a one-off. This is not one bad day or them getting their hearts ripped out of their chest once. It happens seemingly every single week, and each week is worse than the week before. What do you think their mindset is right now? What's it like, that collective psyche of that team, for them to lose the way they do, and especially this past weekend?
Man, you know what? It's the way you lose. And if I was the Chargers and we're getting blown out week in and week out, I would have no faith. But you got to keep the faith, man. They've been struggling the past 2 years with losing close games. I think Phillip Rivers, I think that he might have lost 7 or 8 games last year by under 6 points, including I was a victim of one of those victories in Tennessee myself, forcing a fumble flight. You know, a little plug for the Lumberjack.
Of course.
But if I'm a Chargers fan, I'm not giving up, man. you know, Herbert is playing great, and I think that's where you look at. That's the key of the team, man. You know, that division is always going to be tough. Playing in that division for 6 years, that it was a division winner almost every other year, and you can't give up hope, man. The Chargers fans out there, you got a good young team. Keenan Allen is a leader in the locker room. They got some great pieces in place. They just got to find ways to win those games at the end because, like you said, man, well, you didn't say this, but I think you kind of hinted at it. Bad teams find a way to lose those games, and good teams find a way to win those games. So they got to get on that right track. But I wouldn't give up on them just yet.
I think they're a good team. I think it takes a pretty good team to have a 16-point lead four games in a row. I mean, just to be in that position, you got to be a pretty good team, right? But then they found a way to lose them.
Yeah, that's tough, man. I even look at my Falcons, man. The same thing goes there. But, you know, you gotta. That's where it comes to being a young quarterback. The quarterback of that team, man, you got to be a true leader. It all revolves around the quarterback. If I'm going to go out there and put up 300 yards, 400-plus yards a game, 3-4 touchdowns, my team needs to know and respect that lead. And I think that's where it comes into leadership, you know, as well as, you know, coaches managing that game. But leadership in that team has to start because anybody can go up 17 and just quit. But anybody can't go up 17 and continue to put that throttle down. And I think that's where the Chargers are. They need to mature, and they got to mature fast because at AFC West, that's the only way you're going to be able to compete with Kansas City is if you're on the full throttle gas every play, every day.
So, Wesley, one last thought. When you talk about this generation of young quarterbacks, like you start with Patrick Mahomes, who to me is just a transcendent generational talent. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like it. Let me just ask you really quickly about one guy. To me, I think a real outlier is Kyler Murray. Like, I'm in love with the way this guy plays, yeah. His athleticism, what he brings to it. What do you think, as somebody who played as long as you have in that league at as high a level as you have, when you watch him play, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Man, the first thing that comes to my mind is X factor. And an X factor, having an X factor at quarterback, that automatically gives you a chance to win the game. And I'm sorry. Like, I play with Tim Tebow. You know, he had that X factor. Even though we didn't get as many passing yards as we wanted to, you just felt like you were going to win with that man behind the quarterback. Same thing with Kyler Murray. He goes out there week in and week out, and he's doing – joystick moves on guys. So now he's creating that fear within the NFL bubble. So now when they get a chance to play the Arizona Cardinals, you got to make sure that you're not only putting two guys aware of Tua, the whole defense is on high alert when he gets the ball. Not when he's just passing the ball. Now when he's running the ball, he's making the first defender miss. He's making the second defender miss. Oh, okay, this is your best tackling DB in the backfield. Okay, let me make him miss and score this touchdown. So now that's a complete X factor when you can run the ball as well as you can throw the ball and create not only 5 yards here, but explosive plays over 20 yards. And that's what Kyler Murray does.
He spent the last six seasons with the Titans. He was their 2017 recipient of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, the co-founder of the 16 Ways Foundation, good friend of the program, Wesley Woodyard. Wesley, fam, great to have you back. Appreciate you so much. Thank you for doing that.
All right, good to hear from you, Jim. Stay up, Jungle.
Good night now.